Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
All right, well, fabulous show planned for you today. John Cleese, everyone, legendary Monty Python pioneer John Cleese will be on the first half of the show. You can hear me interview him. First, Simply Safe. It's like commercial-grade security for your home. That's right, better than the other systems. If there's a break-in, they'll use real video evidence to give the police an eyewitness account, and they dispatch up to 350 times faster than a normal burglar alarm. So you got speed, and that's what you want when there's trouble. Outdoor cameras, entry motion, and glass break sensors, plus Simply Safe protects from fires, water damage, and carbon monoxide, the silent killer. Don't sleep on carbon monoxide. I'm telling you, it'll get you. All monitored 24/7 by live security professionals. Set it up yourself. No tools needed. Peel and stick. 3M tape. Batteries last up to 10 years. Or they can do it for you. Whatever you want. Only 50 cents a day. Monitoring. No contracts. Simply Safe, right, Dawson?
Go to simplysafe.com/Adam today and get a free Simply Safe security camera, normally $100. Go today and it's free. It will help you capture crucial evidence for the police and get 350% faster dispatch. Go to simplysafe.com/Adam.
One night only. Laughs with Bald Brian. A night of stand-up comedy benefiting Stupid Cancer, a charity dedicated to helping young adults with cancer. Featuring Larry Miller, Dana Gould, Greg Fitzsimmons, Joel McHale, Brad Williams, Kyle Dunnigan, Jeff Cesario, Dr. Drew, and Adam Carolla. With your host, Brian Bishop.
Hey, this is Brian. I'm so excited and proud to be hosting this incredible fundraiser benefiting Stupid Cancer. They've been there for young adults like me who were diagnosed with cancer, and I'm thrilled to be able to pay it forward. If you love comedy, and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm guessing you do, then please don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to laugh and give back to this great organization.
Saturday, November 2nd at the Avalon Theater in Hollywood. For tickets or to donate to the event, go to laughswithbaldbrian.com. That's laughswithbaldbrian.com. And come out this Saturday to the next stop on the Brian Bishop Tune-Up Tour at the Dudes Brewing Company in Torrance. Featuring Jeff Cesario, Brian McDaniel, and me, Mike Dawson. Hosted by Brian Bishop, this Saturday night, the Dudes Brewing Company in Torrance. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, John Cleese. And comedian Wendy Liebman. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, RJ Bell gives us his NFL picks, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, Minister of Silly Walks, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No judgment to get on a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Love that about you, Baba Boo. Good day, Gina Grant.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
I woke up in Phoenix this morning.
One day they'll appreciate it. So Wendy Liebman is in, John Cleese are on the show. One of them's in studio. I'll let you guys think about which one is coming into the studio.
Well, I guess I'll find out.
I'll give you 10 minutes.
Okay.
Really ruminate, and then we'll venture a guess. All right. This half of the show brought to you by Simply Safe and BetDSI. Castrol Edge as well. Yeah, I did have a very interesting conversation with Cleese, so I hope you guys will find
with
it
Cleese?
Yeah.
Cleese.
Like cheese.
Cleese. God damn it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we got that to look forward to. Breaking Yanni Laurel news.
Oh, shit.
On this 2-year-old meme?
I listened to the show last night, and I heard the Yanni Laurel thing, and I was like, I didn't even know why we're doing this. They just say Laurel. And I listened last night, and it was Yanni.
What?
It was Yanni.
Come on.
I swear to God. So it's Yanni. So what did I do? I was like, something in the recording.
Yeah,
something
Dawson compressed
in the mix.
That shit.
Something in the mix. And for me, it's now turned surreal because I'm listening, Yanni, Yanni, Yanni. And then all of us are indignant going, it's Laurel. God, I can't believe that's all I'm hearing.
It's declared.
I'm hearing Yanni, Yanni.
It's got to be because of the way the show is compressed.
No.
Oh.
No. Go on.
Because
groundling,
I was freaked out.
Don't deny the premise.
I was freaked out, and I was like, first things first.
We're not on Mars. We're in the desert.
It's something about. Yeah, pick up some space work. How's it going with that flat tire? I'll tell you when I'm done starting this fire. That's how all my beginning improv classes work.
Yep.
So the premise is, mistake
right.
number one.
So I then hear Yanni, and I listen to it three times. And
Three times, fool.
I'm a little embarrassed because our reaction is all indignant, Laurel, and this is insane. But I'm now hearing Yanni. And I go, it had something to do with the way it's compressed or delivered or sent through the ultra waves or comes out of my phone speaker. Something changed.
Dawson put a cigarette on the file.
And then I get up today and I go, I must re-listen to it to double check.
Obsessed.
I get up this morning, I listen to it. I hear Laurel. Clear as a bell.
Three.
Oops. Wrong.
I owe Yanni Laurel an apology because it changed from one to the other and then back again.
What, did you listen on the same apparatus?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, his ears.
Yeah, I listened the exact same thing, and it was different. Now, I don't know if it's time. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened, but I will say I do know why people are saying it, because it was all over the place, and we were all going, I don't even get why would you bother doing this? Mm-hmm. The guy just says, Laurel. I heard Yanni that night.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, you guys listening can help us figure it out.
Finally,
do you
want
to hear it again?
Yes.
Just to see what you hear now?
No,
okay,
please.
Just for the hell of it.
Laurel.
All right, that's Laurel.
Yep.
Okay. But
just open and shut.
I heard Yanni last night three times. All right. Let's see. Jeeps. I had a Jeep thought. I don't think I shared it with you guys, but I was thinking about it. I was working on the book with Lynch when I was driving home from the improv.
What's this book about? Teased it out a number of times.
Sorry.
Dude's Brew?
Sorry. I was driving home from the Comedy Store on Saturday night, and I was working with this book. I was working with Lynch, and I was working with Lynch last night driving out to the Reagan Museum to do a corporate thing. So every time I get in the car, I work with Lynch. It had been, I don't know, 4 or 5 years since a book was written. Mm-hmm. Mike is breaking off and trying to start his own practice and blah, 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 and could use a little change in his pocket. So he gets paid pretty well to write these books with me. So we had been discussing, since it'd been a number of years since we'd done a book, some prospects for a new book. It was essentially a kind of a follow-up to In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks, except for it happened in 10 years. It's kind of the 10-year anniversary of what I thought was going to happen in 50 years, but it happened.
It's called We're All Chicks.
In 10 years, yeah. I don't know
Hello,
what the title
chicks.
Is yet. I don't know that's exactly, you know, contrast each chapter. It's not really a spin-off. It's just another book in the vein of In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks, but now it's been 10 years and here's where we're at. So it's that sort of thing. It's me complaining. You know, let's be honest. But Mike does a good job of writing. I do a good job of complaining. And we're going through the list of dudes we can't hang with, dudes. We're putting together a new list of dudes we can't hang with. And I was driving home over Laurel Canyon coming home from the Comedy Store on Saturday night, and he was pitching guys we couldn't hang with. And, you know, it's like steampunk guy and punk. Sorry, steampunk guy. Steampunk.
Steve Punk.
Steve Punk.
Steve up. Steampunk guy and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he came up, and I was driving the Jag going down Laurel. And he said, and one of the guys we'd agreed on is guy who drives the Jeep with no doors guy. Mm-hmm. And that guy bothers me. I don't mind if that guy's out in the desert or out on the trail. It's just tooling up and down Ventura Boulevard in Studio City. Yeah.
You're waving a flag.
That's not how you get to work.
Yeah, I don't need to see your calves when you're driving.
Thank you.
That's fine. But anyway, that dude, so he's got the racks on there and like the extra.
Oh, he just came from the mountain.
Yeah,
I'm sure. And or the beach.
He just came from the car wash because the thing is always nicely detailed. But the guy who drives the Jeep with no doors, that guy can't hang with that guy. Again, driving around Valley Village in Studio City, an Encino guy. But then I thought to myself, that guy's in love with his Jeep and his doorless Jeep. And a lot of the guys, and even guys in my neighborhood who buy the Jeeps for the family, they take those doors off and they pile in and they drive around. Kalen's old roommate was a doorless Jeep guy.
He was, and he would constantly be taking the doors on and off the Jeep.
Right,
and
right.
I said to him, why are you doing that? And he said to me, it's a lifestyle, bro.
It's a lifestyle, bro. Just like my man bun.
Wait, you lived at home. Is this your dad?
Right. It's a lifestyle, bro. That's why I hate these guys, right? Okay. But then I thought to myself, as I was driving my Jag down Laurel Canyon, if you remove the doors from this car, I would have a panic attack.
It's very frightening.
The notion... Picture driving your car with no door.
No thanks.
Nothing sounds less appetizing to me than driving a car with no doors on it. It feels vulnerable and frightening.
Exposed.
Yeah, exposed. You're exposed to the elements.
It just feels weird. Yeah. Like if somebody said, like if I opened my door and some guy blew by it on a truck, you know, truck and just took the door off like they do in movies, and somebody said, you've got to drive your car to the auto body place that's 2 miles away. I would take side streets and slowly
and
creep there,
putter
right?
Along. Yeah, of course.
Right.
Like a golf cart. That's why you drive a golf cart at 10 miles an hour.
I thought to myself, wait a minute. What is so enticing about this no door policy? Now, I get it. Your Jeep is 9 inches higher off the ground than my Jag. That's fine. But still, no doors is no doors. Yeah. If it's the worst thing ever for me, why is it the best thing ever for you? And then I started thinking about, I kind of feel the same way about the nose ring. I feel the same way about the big time tats and
it's
aggressive
look
piercings and man buns. Like, I'm not indifferent about a man bun. You would have to pay me to wear a man bun. I wouldn't be like, if you want. I'm not indifferent about having that. What is that one?
Septum ring.
I'm not indifferent about it. If you wanted to do that to me, you'd have to pay me $700 a day to wear it. And that's just indoors. Right. If I went outdoors, there'd be a premium tax on it. So then I started sort of thinking, I'm not sort of indifferent about this stuff. To normal, sane, non-douchebags, it feels painful.
Yeah, it stirs something in you.
I just thought it's weird
unpleasant that
there's a group of people that buys a vehicle pretty much solely so they can pull the doors off and drive. But if any of us even thought about removing doors from our vehicles and then hopping on the freeway and going to work. It'd be like the most vulnerable. I'd rather put a pipe cleaner up my urethra than drive around. Also, I'd feel weird just people kind of looking at you.
You
know what I mean?
You're exposed.
It's vehicular tattoos.
Everyone would see your tribal tattoo around your calf.
Right.
Everyone would hear you, Jack Johnson.
Wire,
yeah.
Right. All right. So anyway, I just thought it was, I'd seen a million guys driving Jeeps without doors, but I never did the math to me getting in my car without doors and following
what that
the
would
guy
take.
And what it would feel like. Right. And it would feel horrible.
Yeah.
All right. There's that. There's, we got a early review on No Safe Spaces. No Safe Spaces is in one theater in Arizona. I'm trying to think of which. Is it
Scottsdale Harkins Theater, and it's this weekend. I mean, tickets went quick, but please check nosafespaces.com to see if any more tickets open up. Also, we're going to be rolling out to many other cities after that, so find a city near you at nosafespaces.com.
We shall be doing some meets and some greets, I think, before the shows on Friday today, as you hear this, if you can get out there. And, yeah, they sold tens of thousands of dollars worth of tickets already, oh, so it's been a big been early success. We'll see if we can spread it out. Now,
can I ask you, you know what I think my guess is about that? I think that the title and the subject matter is equally intriguing to both quote unquote sides. You know what I mean? It's a very, I hate using this word out of context, very sexy topic.
Yeah.
Everybody has an opinion about it. And I don't think it caters to one audience. I think everyone's interested in how this is going to unfold.
Well, it should. I was talking to Larry King about it yesterday, and I said, one thing I'm very interested in, and it every day it goes by, it becomes more apparent to me. Leftism versus liberalism. I consider myself liberal, but I don't consider myself left. And then he sort of brought up conservative and right. And I said, yeah, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, it's not the same thoughts, but
principle.
Liberalism is to leftism what conservatism is to right.
Right. Right.
So it's kind of the same thing. And I can deal with conservatives and I can deal with liberals. I can't deal with right and left.
Right.
That's, I think, where we're coming down on. And I think this movie is going to be a little bit of a intellectual honesty divining rod, which is everybody has a team, and we're all kind of wired to go, your team, I'm a Ravens fan and you're a Steelers fan, and Big Ben was on top of those girls at that party. He deserves to be.
No way, dude. That guy's totally innocent. He wasn't even there.
He deserves to be suspended for the whole year.
No way. That's a family man. He's at home every night on his knees praying.
My guy just punched his gal in the elevator, but that's because she had been antagonizing
him. They got to throw him out of the league. Throw him out of the country.
He was trying to subdue her.
Can we burn him alive? Is that on the table?
So I think what we're looking for is if you're asking my guy to be suspended for a year, then you have to admit your guy should be suspended. And then we still have a team, but you're being sort of intellectually honest and
consistent, at least.
Yeah, consistent. And the thing about this doc is it has a lot of Cornel West and Van Jones and Alan Dershowitz in it. And everyone is basically just saying, hey, man, free speech. We gotta hang on to it with both hands. So you may lean left and you may be the liberal side versus the conservative side. But I think if you're intellectually honest, you'll go, yeah, good. I agree.
Yeah, we all agree on that.
It's a good thing. Good film. Now, if you hate it, then we'll know you're left. And there's versions of that both directions. But what I'm saying is you will be exposing yourself as somebody because Van Jones is on the left, but he's liberal, and he speaks eloquently about people being able to speak their minds. So if he said, fuck you, I want no part of this thing, then he would be kind of exposing himself as someone who wouldn't tolerate any other.
You're digging in.
Right. All right. But we have our first early review from the AV Club.
Yes, hot off the press. This is from the AV Club, a very popular website. The title is Debate Me, You Coward. Takes movie form in Adam Carolla's abysmal No Safe Spaces.
Oh, crap.
Oh, Chris, why would you say that?
All right, now I'll start reading the review. Yeah, this is from Vadim Rizov. And some excerpts are, quote, he comes from college and knowledge. I come from tomfoolery and sports. That's how Adam Carolla of Loveline and the Man Show fame describes his alliance with Dennis Prager, a conservative talk show host and commenter whose social views on nearly everything are reprehensible.
Oh, reprehensible on everything.
I was going to say.
Such a nice guy.
That's peanut butter and jelly.
Hates it.
Disgusting.
Views on everything are reprehensible. All right.
And here's another line. This isn't an argument for free speech. It's just paranoid whining, complete with a round table of comics sympathetically agreeing how sad and scary this all is, plus images of the Statue of Liberty with tape over its mouth.
What'd they give it?
It gave it an F.
For freaking great.
Yeah, for freedom.
Got it.
Now, I was doing some research into this guy. He weirdly reviews a lot of right-leaning documentaries and conservative
And he's usually a fan?
No. Normally, he's not shy giving the Fs and the Ds. Mm. And then also, he gave the Emoji Movie a D. So.
The Emoji Movie.
Better than your movie.
The movie made a ton of money. You should be so lucky.
Yeah.
So remember the de Blasio clip we played and the guy clearly was not a huge fan? It's like, this is the exact same thing. I was like, what are we to take from this? We obviously don't like the premise.
Well, here's the difference, I think, between the de Blasio clip and this guy. The de Blasio clip guy was laying out statistics and arguing for something that was effective and then giving numbers to back it up. Mm-hmm. This guy's like, F.
Right.
So, I mean, what you're saying is I'm all for, you can go, oh, I hate de Blasio and I hate his take on vouchers and charter schools. Now you must roll out some numbers.
Yeah.
Now you have to defend yourself and you have to make smart. I know it's a little less, you know, when it comes to reviewing a film, I think there's more room for opinion and unless. Obviously, can't review a film with facts, but I'm saying the difference between that guy who doesn't like de Blasio and this guy doesn't like me, to answer your question, is that guy's giving you statistics, and that's all I'd want from anybody, either direction.
Right. I suppose just shots fired and drop the mic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm assuming people disagree with everyone all the time, and thus a case must be made,
and
that's where statistics and test scores come in.
And that's what would have made that review so interesting if he said, everything about Adam Carolla is reprehensible, but no, Brian, but here are some things that I really got out of the movie. Then we'd be off to the races, but if he starts and ends there, then there's nothing else to talk about.
Also, I guess it just means you don't really know. You're not willing to investigate a guy like Dennis Prager a little bit. You know what I mean? If you just announce, which is...
the anti-Semite Dennis Prager?
Well, I mean...
Self-loathing.
I probably don't agree with a lot of the stuff Van Jones may agree with, but I don't think he's a reprehensible person. We just have different thoughts on school vouchers. Right. You know, what's the difference? I mean, I don't know why we have to get to reprehensible or Nazi all the time when you just did. It's what I'm saying is if somebody disagrees with a thought you have, it is insanely narcissistic to then make that person a bad person.
Yes, if they disagree with me, thus they are bad.
Yes, it's like Jimmy likes the song Man Eater. Right. Now, I'm sure he's doing it just to piss me off, but he likes Man Eater.
It's got
to
be about you.
I think it's the worst song ever made, but I don't now think he's a bad person because he's disagreeing with me, and it's a weird place. But also, I do think people should... I think people who review movies or write articles or have opinion columns or things like that need to kind of remove themselves a little from what it is that they're reviewing or the column they're writing. You know what I've said many, many times, if you're going to review a new sushi restaurant and you hate sushi, you can't just approach it from that angle. We want to know if it's good or bad.
Right.
You hate Dennis Prager, you hate this movie, but other people don't hate Dennis Prager and they may enjoy this movie.
Or put that in as a disclaimer, just so you know, before you read this review, I already hate these two people.
But as I always say, you can't give a movie that is a good movie and a well-crafted movie. If you give it an F, then I'm on to what you're saying. Right. Then I'm on to you. You give it a C-, and then it'll be a kind of bad score, and you won't have shown your hand.
And some people may take it seriously, but who's going to take an F seriously?
That's right. All right, let's see. RJ is on line 6. Do we have an intro, or do we just jump on it? Hey, RJ.
Listen, this might be controversial, but I think less than 90% of your thoughts, Adam, are reprehensible to me. Less than 90 for sure.
Ooh, I'm at mid-80s. Reprehensible. all right. I also I do find it funny. Like, I was talking to Larry King off the air yesterday, and he's like, "Oh, you do this movie with Dennis Prager," and I was like, "Yeah," and he's like, I love that guy. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. I disagree with everything he says, but he's a great guy. And I said, I don't think you disagree with everything he says. I think there's probably three subjects you disagree with, and then there's probably 20 things you probably agree with.
Ground.
Why do you have to just go, I disagree?
I declare.
There's no reason. You guys are both scholarly, old Jews who broadcast. And
you're off on the right foot already.
And you both love this country. Yeah. Like, what's the... Why force yourself to go down that road? Yeah. And why do you do that weird sweeping? I don't agree with anything he says. RJ, I want to know about this Aaron Donald sack for the Rams against Matt Ryan last week. And I want to know what the rule is. And I also, by the way, in my somebody's D must go, in my DeAndre Hopkins D, and I wanted to give it to Todd Gurley. Aaron could use one, too.
Aaron Donald.
Yeah. First off, RJ, I know we prepped you a little bit on this.
Yeah.
The rule used to be, if somebody caught a ball or intercepted a ball and they're tumbled around and one guy got up and ran, if they just brushed elbows or incidental contact or anything, he was down by contact. Mm-hmm.
If you were touched anyway.
Touched anyway.
On the ground.
Then I think they...
Or on your way to the ground.
I thought they reversed that or reviewed it, so you had to be touched down. It was very frustrating. Mm-hmm. If your guy, your team caught the ball, and as he was getting up and had one knee down, they showed a slow motion of the guy's leg scraping the other guy's leg,
that
right?
That would count as down by contact.
Right, and you want him tackled or brought down or tagged down, tapped down,
that'd
or whatever.
That'd be more satisfying for sure.
Right, so did they reboot that rule? Did they change that rule, RJ?
Not to my understanding. The three elements that are required is, one, you need to have, and I think this is where that play that I watched the tape on from Twitter you guys sent, or the video play, is, I think this might be where it was confusing. You've got to have control of the ball, right? Have possession, you have to be down, and you have to be touched. And
but
to
touched
me,
means touched could, hold on. Touched could be skimmed by somebody's foot, right?
Right.
Yes.
Any
yes,
contact
the only other
at
rationale,
all.
And I looked around a little on this, could be the idea that it's some intentional touching. But obviously there's a lot of plays in the secondary where two guys go up for the ball, they go down together, they're not necessarily, the defender isn't touching on purpose, but they still won't let the guy get up. So to me it felt like that call, and might have been a wrong call, but it was about him having control of the ball or not.
Well, RJ and Brian, Gina.
I didn't see this play.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't the rule be you touched a guy down volitionally? Or you tackle him, not that you guys brush.
If you watch old footage from like the 50s and 60s, you had to be, your forward progress had to be stopped. There'd be guys that would be like, be tackled, and they're still crawling for extra yardage because you had to be stopped.
Oh, they'd get tackled twice. But we can all agree.
If you got knocked down, you get right back up.
I mean, when you watch this play, Matt Ryan is on his face, like flailing. Like there's no, he didn't make no effort to, we'll watch
the play.
There's some replays after it, too.
Donald does a strip sack and then pulls the ball away when they're, like, underneath. And then gets up and runs. And first off, I don't know. Why the quick whistle? Why are we blowing the whistle? I mean, we don't know if he had control of the ball. Uh-huh. So the ball was on the ground.
So, interior lineman goes for the sack.
Right. Strips
ball
him.
Comes out.
Ball's
right.
out. Matt Ryan sort of falls on it, but the ball's rolling around, and he pulls it out, and nobody touches him. He's touching the guy as he's pulling the ball out.
Yeah, for player safety, I imagine they'd whistle it dead pretty quickly.
But why? They don't whistle other. They're letting other plays go. We don't know if there's... We don't know...
Yeah, he was touching Matt Ryan when he got the ball.
But we don't know the control part. Yeah. Like, it's a control thing. But also... I want to change the rule, which is you got to touch. You got to
volitionally.
You're just laying on your belly, and he pulled the ball out from under your belly, so he made contact with you, but you didn't touch him or tackle him.
Yeah,
should have taken that one to the house.
It's the letter of the law, not the spirit of the law. In this case,
how say you, RJ Bell?
I'm just wondering how much money you had on this.
They were up by 24 points at that point.
I have been bothered. I am bothered by any rule that flies in the face of football. This flies in the face of football, which is you didn't tackle this guy. He sacked you and stripped the ball. Your corpse was laying on its belly, and he brushed against you.
Letter of the law.
Yeah.
So you touched, I guess.
Changed the law.
It's really about justice, is what you're saying.
It's about justice. Now, let me see. I know Kim Kardashian is doing her thing.
Yeah, yeah right.
I work for another organization. These are white guys who bet the over. And they need justice.
Right. I mean, all six.
That's right. So,
you know, I can't lie, guys. I think in some moments I'm like a poor man's Adam, and you know I do get worked up and I rant. But, you know, I think I only do when I lose money, and it really makes my life calmer. I can't lie.
I had no money on this game. Of course, I am a Rams fan, but I've never liked the notion that guys get tangled up on a great pick. And then the most exciting thing in football is picking it up and taking it to the house, and you just blow it dead because they got balled up at the end. But no touching, no attempt. Pretty easy to see if a guy tackles a guy or touches a guy.
12 all camera right. angles.
Anyway, they'll change it, I do believe. Do we have an intro for RJ?
It's time for RJ's Parlay, presented by BetDSI with Vegas insider RJ Bell.
All right. You got a win with the Ravens last week. God, Ravens 30-16 over the Seahawks. That was a ballsy bet, man, and
in
done
Seattle.
Well. And a loss with the Saints and the Bears. Hey, RJ, what do we do with the Cam Newtons of the world and guys who are coming back but were struggling before they left and their backups are 4-0?
Teddy Bridgewater?
This is fascinating, and Carolina is the perfect example of that. You've got a guy who, in Allen, who was, I can't remember if he was undrafted or sixth or seventh round, but he was not pedigreed at all. And what we know historically is Tom Brady proves he's the exception that proves the rule. Is literally, it's so hard to find guys who aren't pedigreed. And Tony Romo's one guy way back when that met this criteria. But if you're not in the first couple rounds, and Dak Prescott's on the extreme, a fourth round guy, you just don't make it as an NFL quarterback. You've got Allen in that category who's really playing well. What I will say, I think they go back to Cam because, in a way, even if they're looking to trade him, having him show himself healthy is going to make a big difference because he still has value. Cam is a number one pick. He certainly isn't playing the way he used to, but is it about the injuries? That's the ultimate question.
Wow.
So to me, I think that one thing to look ahead for, this is going to be a good little premonition. One of the problems with Allen was his hand size is significantly smaller than you'd expect for a quarterback, and he's had a bunch of fumbles, and it hasn't hurt him yet, but I think the fumbles are going to be a big problem with Allen.
Can we agree on this, Bald Brian, include yourself into this conversation?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Cam, first off, Cam needs to get into a Slim Jim. You know, that guy's got to get some meat. He's got to get some meat back and just snap into a Slim Jim.
Oh, I'm going to lose weight. I'm
he's got to get some meat.
Oh, yeah.
You got to get back on the animal protein, according to Vinny.
That's right, because the vegetarian thing, he's a vegan.
Number two. Could we say this? Is this a slap in the face if I'm Cam Newton's coach? Cam Newton was not playing well.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Newton was injured, and this guy's won. Is this guy peeled off four wins in a row?
Yes. I think it's, let me think. I think 5-2. I think it's 5. They were off London. Yes, 4-0.
He's 4-0. If I'm Cam's coach and you're talking to a superstar in the NFL, am I allowed to say, you're healed? You're my quarterback. This guy has won four games straight.
Right.
I have to wait for him to lose a game before I bring you back.
I guess you're allowed to say it. Cam Newton was clearly not healthy and hurt in those first couple games. A fully healthy Cam Newton is an incredible weapon and a top 6-5 quarterback
but
in the league.
But he wasn't playing that well last year, was he?
Was he the MVP 2 years ago? Yeah, 3 years ago?
No, but last year...
I disagree with Brian on that one.
He played weak.
I think
when they made the Super Bowl a few years ago, he was certainly there. But
2015.
With these players who aren't let's say, grinders. So, you know, let's acknowledge it. Cam Newton's putting a lot of time in, a lot of time. But he's not putting in Peyton Manning time, Tom Brady time. And those guys, as they get a little bit older, they tend to drop off faster because they so rely on their physical skills. And I think it's unquestionable that Cam is not the physical specimen he was back, you know, four or five years ago.
What would you do if you were the coach? My instinct would be, I can't pull a guy who's rung up four straight wins. I must let him have a bad game, or I must have him have an L before I put the new guy in. I don't know. It's a tricky call. What's yours?
I think to some degree, Cam is maybe motivated not to play, and I think for a couple reasons. One, he gets paid anyway, right? But more importantly, he can make the case that his lack of health is why he did underperform the last 2 years, and thus if he wants a new contract, he wants to get traded, it's not a distressed asset. If he comes back healthy and plays much worse than Allen, all of a sudden now, what kind of value is Cam getting on a new contract? In a weird way, to let people dream on his past is more valuable, I think, than the reality of his present.
Bald Brian, currently undefeated in the company Fairy Tale Football League.
I'm dominating, man. Yeah. Leading the league in points and 7-0.
So this is Clash of the Titans. It's interesting. All right, RJ, how about you give us your picks for this week?
Okay, so we've got two picks for the parlay. Number one, this is kind of zen, kind of paradoxical, just kind of ponder. You can be the best player in the NFL, and you can be overrated. Mm-hmm. And that's what I believe Mahomes is. He's out, and they've adjusted the line about 8 points. Now, I think he's worth 8 points, but here's the thing. They had adjusted the line about 3 points because he was banged up. So if you consider the fact with the 3-point adjustment and the new 7, he's now been adjusted for 10 points. There's only one player in the history of the NFL that's ever been adjusted that much. Aaron Rodgers in his prime. Mahomes, I think, is a little overrated here. I also am not a fan of Green Bay on the road, especially. That's who Kansas City's playing. So I'm going to take Kansas City +4 as pick number one.
All right.
Love that bet.
Good. Pick number two.
Pick two, I'm going contrarian. I liked the Giants last week. The Giants got killed. They got embarrassed. Now they're getting 7, a full touchdown against Detroit. I don't really like the Giants, but I don't mind going against that big disappointing loss last week. But the play here, and the pick is the Giants, the play here is against Detroit. Because what happened is the trading deadline got moved 2 weeks up to week 8. You had some trades this week. One of them was Detroit traded away their defensive captain. This is a guy that was very popular and pretty productive. Their very best defensive player, a cornerback named Slay, was on Twitter cursing, talking about how bad it was they traded him. I believe Matt Patricia, the coach for Detroit, in this trade, it's just a sign that this locker room is discontented, and I think that's a bad situation to come into a football game with. So this is more of a fade of Detroit, but the second pick, Giants +7.
You guys can help me with this stat because I'm going to screw it up, but I was watching the Detroit game last week, and it was like Matthew Stafford, fastest quarterback to
40,000 yards, I think.
40,000 yards or something. And it's
RJ,
like,
is that right?
Something like that.
You know, I'm not exactly sure of the 40,000. I know he broke a record, so if that's what you guys are quoting,
it was fastest to this achievement. And I thought, boy, if you gave me 100 guesses, I don't think I'd come up with Matthew Stafford, right?
No. Quietly very productive over his career, especially from a fantasy perspective.
Right.
You know what they call him? I didn't mean to interrupt, Brian. They call him Matt Stat Packer.
Oh,
I'd not heard that. Mm. That makes sense.
And he's, if you actually look at his stats when they're down by 10 or more or up by 10 or more, a lot of yards during the time that it wasn't really win time.
Garbage time, Matt.
Well, it makes sense for a guy who's, you know, playing on a perpetual sub-500 team. It seems unlikely that that guy would be the fastest to 40,000 yards, but now this is a good explanation of it. All right, RJ, take care of a little sponsor business for us, would you please?
Absolutely. So BetDSI sponsoring this segment, And you can use the promo code ADAM101, all one word, ADAM101, and here's what you get. 100% bonus match. So you put a deposit in, they match 100% of it. Here's the thing I can say unequivocally. We have less, I would say, hardcore bettors here, more casual bettors. Is if you want to improve your chance of winning, but you don't want to go through all the effort of a professional, adding sports books is the easiest, best way. If you have less than three books, you are literally not giving yourself a chance to win. Hmm. Because if the whole world's at seven and somehow you're only getting 6.5, in the long run, you can't win. So this is an example of give it a try. You get the 100%. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, you haven't lost anything. So that's betdsi.com, promo code ADAM101.
Thanks, RJ. Play the outro, would you please? And I'll give you a plug.
RJ's Parlay, presented by BetDSI.
Pregame.com is where you go to check out all of RJ and what's going on in his podcast, Dream Preview, as well. Thanks, RJ.
Thank you, guys.
John Cleese. Cleese. Cleese as in cheese. It helps. I used to say George Takei, and Jimmy said Takei as in gay, and I've never screwed it up again.
Ironically, the most respectful thing you could do. Get his name right.
Get his name right. It was. All right, quick break. Back with John Takei after this.
Corolla Drinks congratulates El Coyote Cafe, the 2019 world champion of guacamole. Visit them online at elcoyotecafe.com. El Coyote, the world champion of guacamole. We're a top all made for taking hearts to good. Special thanks to Everride. Check out the debut EP from Everride, November 1st. Technical support courtesy of JBL and Champion Sight and Sound. Catering at the World Championship of Guacamole provided by Mamey's Cooking and Javier's Tacos. Congratulations to El Coyote Cafe in Los Angeles, the 2019 World Champion of Guacamole. For more, follow at Official WCOG and get ready for the 2020 World Championship of Guacamole.
John Cleese is on with us. I'm a huge fan. Everyone's a fan of John Cleese. He has a live show coming up. Well, it's true. An evening with John Cleese. It's November 1st and 2nd at the Wynn in Las Vegas, and tickets are available at winlasvegas.com. Good to speak to you, John.
Nice to talk to you. As you know, the Wynn Hotel is where Spamalot had a good run.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's so, I'm a huge fan of comedy. I didn't start off a huge fan of Monty Python. I grew into Monty Python. I matured into Monty Python. And believe it or not...
I'm glad you said you matured into it. It was something that was very strange to people, and that's why we have quite a devoted following, too, amongst older people in particular, because they just hadn't heard anything like it before. And, of course, in England, when it first went out, there was a sort of puzzled silence from most people. They had no idea what it was about. But now, once people got the taste for it, then they found that they were very fond of it because nobody else was doing anything quite like it.
Well, it's funny. So I started off enjoying shows like Get Smart and with Don Adams and things
that. That was good.
Sort of Mel Brooksy stuff.
That was a good show.
And
yes, Mel Brooks.
I enjoyed Benny Hill. Your national treasure, Benny Hill, just, I think, for the boobies when I was
yes,
young.
Yes, of course, because most of Benny was a very funny guy, but he wasn't very ambitious in terms of quality. And I once watched one of his shows with a notebook, and 70% of his jokes were about boobies and bottoms and lavatories. And he was better than that, but he didn't bother to be. But he was a funny man. But we were very much at the other end of the spectrum from that. And it took us a long time to build up an audience because it was very different.
Well, I remember watching Benny Hill and watching all those shows as a young, I guess, person with a comedic mind. And Monty Python would come on, and it felt weird. It felt like a like if it was music.
Like, weird is an awfully good word. Yes. Very weird and silly. Go on.
Well, it's as if you'd been listening to big band music, and then you saw Elvis, and you didn't know what to make of it. But it is
what a lovely thing to say. No, that's right. I mean, people were very puzzled, particularly, as usual, the TV executives. We were just enormously lucky to find one guy who happened to be the head of comedy at that time who commissioned the series. But his boss, who was head of light entertainment, hated it. And when they had a meeting of the heads of department, you know, the people who are head of drama or children or outside broadcast or sport, most of them, six out of eight of them, hated it. So there were a lot of people at the start who were puzzled and another lot who were quite alienated. But that seems to have gone away now. I imagine there's lots of people who don't like it, but there's enough who do, and that's all that matters.
Well, I started at a certain point, so then, of course, everyone loved the Holy Grail and started quoting it all the time. It was very quotable. I think people, at least in the United States, liked doing the fake English accent, and so it became very... very quotable, if you know. I think it's interesting. I've never really drilled down on it. If you guys were all from Boston or Chicago, would all my young friends be doing your voices and quoting it? But everyone would quote Holy Grail, and I started to soften
it's
up.
Because,
yes.
Yeah, but I mean, what are the movies? There are movies where there's one or two lines that people quote, like when Harry met Sally, you know, I'll have whatever she's having.
Right.
One of the great lines there at the end of Some Like It Hot, you know, nobody's perfect. People have quotes from movies, but not a lot of them. Whereas Life of Brian, I can think of at least 10 quotes that I hear all the time.
Well, obviously.
I don't understand it.
Well, I understand it, and it's not strange. You're being humble. Most comedians, if you make movies for a lifetime, you hope to get one quotable moment out of that movie, like I'll have what she's having. It just doesn't happen as many great Woody Allen movies there are and Albert Brooks movies there are. There are only a handful of quotables. In those, you guys did a very good job of writing those movies, and thus there were many quotables. So I'll say it if you won't.
Yes, you're right, aren't you? Because even Woody, who packs in very good gags into his movie, which are more quotable than situations, I could only think of one or two of those. I loved it when he said, nature is one, like one huge restaurant.
Nature, I right.
I thinking that was terribly funny, but I can't think of many others offhand, no.
Yeah, there's something about masturbation and knocking my hobbies or something like that that was a quotable, but look at me, I can't even recall it. Yeah, but nature's like one huge restaurant, the fish eating the other fish, and that was always a funny line. So I started then softening up on Monty Python, and then I started to watch Holy Grail, and I got past all the sort of bizarre... sort of farcical parts of it, and I started to really focus on how funny the writing was. And it was essentially like getting to know a woman for her personality and getting past her physicality.
What a wonderful, wonderful simile. I love it. That's a great compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, except for in my example, the chick isn't hot. She's a burn victim, but you learn to love her because of her amazing personality.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, there's some lovely lines in it. I think that the French taunter
Yes.
You know, and what was so strange about those taunts was that they were not really very offensive. I mean, Donald Trump leaves them nowhere. He would never call someone an empty-headed animal trough wiper, you know, animal food trough wiper. And they were, it was because these insults were so strange and not really very insulting. Even your mother was a hamster and your father smelled of elderberries.
Smelled of elderberries, yes. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, so it's like I didn't even know where half this stuff came from. But smelled of elderberries is a perfect example of that. One of the funniest concepts of Holy Grail was his traveling minstrel who would sing about what a coward he was. That to me struck me as...
Oh, that's right, yes. Sir Robin, yes, that's right.
That struck me as conceptually really funny, and that was one of those things that as I was getting on to Monty Python, I was thinking, okay, everything is weird, but that's a really funny concept.
Yes, that's quite right. Well, I think cowardice is very underrated. I think it's an excellent... I think it's an excellent invention, cowardice. I think if there was more cowardice around, there'd be less people killed, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And especially now that we've mixed lack of cowardice with energy drinks with a GoPro camera, we have people willing to try anything. So
it's very good. I love that.
For you, you started off in academia, right? I mean, you started off as a student, as a lawyer or barrister, whatever we're calling it, at Cambridge.
Yes, I got into Cambridge on science, and then I had a big shock because I realized that a lot of the people who were going to Cambridge to study science were actually interested in it. And I realized that put me as a great disadvantage. So I tried to find out what else I could do. And they said, what about the only thing you can start from scratch is the law? So I did law for 3 years, and I was expecting at the end of my time at Cambridge to go out and become a just perfectly ordinary lawyer, a solicitor, as we call them, not one of the ones who appears in court, but one of the ones who sort of does the preparatory work for that. And then in my last year, I was a member of this club that did little reviews and sketches. We used to do a little show at Cambridge in the last week of the academic year because all the parents arrived to see their children get matriculated or get their degrees or whatever you call it. And suddenly this little show that was supposed to be on for a week or two in Cambridge suddenly was transferred to the West End, and that was the end of all our normal hopes. So all of us, we were going to be teachers and advertising people and lawyers, all finished up in show business. Very strange, but fun.
Right, and that's why, I mean, the notion of having a plan in life should be dismissed pretty early in life because nobody has any idea.
Oh, you are so right, sir. You are so right. In fact, my favorite joke is, how do you make God laugh? Answer, you tell him your plans.
Well, you know what's funny, I mean, or at least interesting. In the next room are a couple of UFC fighters, Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell. When those guys started their combat career, when they were wrestling and kickboxing and stuff, mixed martial arts in the UFC didn't even exist. So how could you have a plan to do something for a living, to play a sport professionally and be paid millions of dollars, and the sport doesn't even exist? So that's what I'm saying. Podcasting didn't exist when I essentially started my broadcast career. So how could I ever plan to do something that didn't exist?
Yes, you're quite right. And not only do you have new inventions, what you find is the economics suddenly change. People go from making records to touring because the economics has changed. people go to touring from making television, because the economics of it changed. In my day, the big aim of everyone I knew, like Peter Cook, who was a comedic genius, was to be in a West End show.
Right.
And then it became to have a TV show. And then it became to be in movies. And then movies seemed to get less important again. And suddenly television came back. And now I'm back touring and on stage, because I had a big divorce to pay off, and it was the most consistent, predictable way of bringing money in. So the economics are changing the media all the time.
Well, the show, An Evening with John Cleese, again, two nights only, November 1st and 2nd at the Wynn in Las Vegas. And again, you can get tickets at WynnLasVegas.com, or you can check out John's website as well, thejohncleese.com. Hey, last question for you, John. I feel like you have a superior intellect, and I know people like you.
It depends who you're comparing it with. If you're comparing it with Trump supporters, I would agree with you.
Current humanity. Now, I also have this theory, because I know a few guys that are this way. They could take that superior intellect and they could point it in a lot of different directions. You know, you could have been a great attorney. You could have been a great fill in the blank. Do you feel, and I don't want you to seem boastful here, but I mean, do you feel like you have a critical way of thinking, a way of looking at life that would serve you if you were a teacher or you were an engineer or an attorney, but you just steered it toward comedy because that's what you love? Or do you just feel like a funny person?
Ah, what an interesting question. I certainly feel like a funny person because I see a lot around me. As I get older, I see more and more things around me that make me laugh. But I think that what I have, which is a little bit unusual, is a balance between creativity and logic. You see, some people are extremely creative, but they don't have the logical capacity to criticize their own work and change it where it's not right. And other people are so logically strong that they're not very creative, and they produce very careful and thoughtful work, but it's not terribly creative. So I think the key that I have is that my balance, my creativity and my logical side are kind of in balance. They don't get in each other's way. Does that help?
Yeah, that was a really satisfying answer. John, thanks for joining us. I hope when you're in L.A. next, you can come by in person and we can continue the conversation.
I would be delighted to do that. I'll be in L.A., but not this year. I have a lovely daughter there, so I'll be coming to work with her next year.
Well, when you do come to L.A. next year, which sounds far away, but it's really not now, please.
It's not now, no.
Please, we'll get you on the calendar, and please stop by, and we'll do this in person.
I'd love to do that. I'd love to do it. That's agreed, sir.
Thank you, John Cleese, everybody. Again, live, coming up in Vegas, November 1st and 2nd, and go to WynnLasVegas.com and get tickets to a live show, An Evening with John Cleese. Thank you very much, sir.
Great pleasure. Lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, the great John Cleese, and I've had a lot of weird celebrity sightings. So in the last 2 weeks, I don't run in Hollywood circles, so to speak. I don't know big celebrities, or I mean, I do. I know of them, but we don't hang out.
Yeah.
With I don't
not BFFs.
Have those stories where it's like me and Spade were at Largo.
I've only gone to Costner's place a few times.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. So, but in like the last 4 weeks, I've had Caitlyn Jenner reach out to me. I had Larry David reach out. I had Kevin Costner reach out, just sort of to say hi. I had Judd Apatow last night reach out to me.
Last night.
He's just like, hey, first off, God love Judd. It's so much easier just to be Judd Apatow.
I imagine it would be.
But I'm just meaning, it's like Judd Apatow, like, just sends me a note and he goes, hey, have any docs? I always love watching your docs. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, nice.
And I want to send you my Gary Shandling book. Can I have an address? Just apropos of nothing, just out of nowhere. So there's Apatow, there's Larry David, there's Caitlyn Jenner, there's Kevin Costner, have I said it? And God, there's and Stallone. Stallone's people called
hitters.
And they're like, hey, Stallone wants your phone number. Just weird, just randomly, nothing to do with anything, none of them based on anything,
right.
So to speak. So just a random outpouring.
That's
and then
cool.
And then Cleese wanting to, Cleese, please.
Please.
Cleese, John Cleese wanting to contact me after that interview. So random, but
lovely.
Feels good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird, though. It's really a story about me bragging to people about who wants to talk to me, who's a lot better than me.
Yeah.
You know, so in the end, it has
look at all these people punching down.
It has a sad ending. Yeah. All right. Well, Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol with fluid titanium transforms under pressure, keeps the metal from robbing and rubbing. It's three times.
Three times, fool.
Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It's the edge. It's formulated. It is the best. It is new and improved. Castrol Edge, everybody. We're when we wrap the show today, we're all hopping on a plane and going to Arizona. And I've been out and about going, you know, when you live in an air-conditioned house and you drive an air-conditioned car, you don't notice it as much, the heat, but when you're going from warehouse to warehouse and you're working on the warehouse and they're doing construction or you're working on cars, there's no air conditioning, you kind of notice. And I was leaving one warehouse coming here today, and I thought, God, got to get to Arizona to beat the heat.
Yeah, it's hotter here than it is in Phoenix.
Got to get to Phoenix so we can get a break.
Yeah.
We get a break from this weather.
Cool off.
It's insane. It's in the mid-90s right now.
Oh,
almost Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Mid-90s. Yeah, I mean, it was 95 and I was driving here and it was way before noon. All right. Wendy Liebman, comedian, is going to be here. Oh, God. Can't wait to get there. I'm going to be in Salt Lake City, by the way. Just enjoying walking around in sweatpants in a hoodie over there. I'll be there tonight and tomorrow, by the way, at Wise Guys doing two shows. So a couple tickets left. Come on out. But it's averaging 50 degrees.
Oh,
out.
Sounds
to imagine
great.
Walking
Chris
around.
Jacket.
No graffiti.
Brush the dust off your jacket.
Yeah. Love it. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Wendy right after this.